Well, I was very disappointed. This is about being able to access medical care, to have full equality for women, to make sure that we have access to reproductive freedom.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. And on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, we catch up with New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. Well, with the election just 6 months away, it remains a busy time in the halls of Washington. Now that appropriations bills are in place, the farm bill and foreign policy are just a couple of areas of focus. Here's my latest conversation with New York Democratic Senator Kirsten Gillibrand.
From my perspective, I'm a little more hopeful that maybe we can get back to business and get things done. I thought it was a breakthrough for Speaker Johnson to be able to separate the four bills, call the vote, and get it to the Senate. I'm not sure that we're back to perfect regular order because now the FAA bill is being held up, and it sounds like the Speaker is going to do a short-term extension so that we can do it next week. I'm not sure. I just wish they would vote on it and bring it to us. I also feel like there's bills and opportunities in the Senate side that we could pass here and then hopefully pitch it to the House and maybe get it done there. One of the things that I'm hopeful for right now is that we could get our age discrimination bill through the Senate and then send it over to the House. Also, a number of bills surrounding the farm bill I'm working on to try to get done in this term, as well as a number of changes in the defense bill. So hopefully, I don't know, you know, I think Speaker Johnson is somewhat novice and is learning as he goes. Marjorie Taylor Greene continues to threaten with a vote for his speakership. I don't know if that's going to happen, but it's certainly created a lot of instability in terms of being able to function properly to get the things done that the American people want us to get done.
So let's talk about one of the things you just mentioned, the farm bill. Now we have some details here, and this is a five-year bill that I think is a little overdue right now. So what do you think so far of what's in it?
So all that we've published so far is the Democratic framework for the farm bill. So these are the agreements that we've made as a Democratic caucus that we want to fight for. I don't know that any of it's definitely getting in. I know that we have a shot of getting it in. So the things that I'm working on that I'm very proud of that would be great for New York, we want to expand and improve the access to the SNAP benefits. Those are the old food stamps. We want certain groups of people to have more eligibility because they're not getting the food and nutrition that they need. One is we want to make more military families eligible for SNAP benefits. We've realized that 24% of service members experience food insecurity every year. So we are trying to make sure that their basic allowance for housing is not included in the calculation about whether they're eligible for SNAP. That would go a long way to making sure that people can afford food. Second, we want to work on people who start working for the SNAP benefits program to get job training to get a job. That's being held against them in access to get SNAP benefits. And we want to make sure that people who are trying to get job training can actually still get the food they need to survive. And then the last group that we're trying to include in are foster youth. If you're in foster care, you age out of your foster system at 18, you are going to college at 18. And so for all your 2 or 4 years at higher ed, you may be very and deeply food insecure, and because you don't have a home to go home to, your parents aren't sending you money, there's no support for going to the dining hall, and so getting them access to SNAP would be hugely important. So those are the three things I'm working on that. We want to continue to fund the Healthy Food Financing Initiative, which is a program that we help to eliminate food deserts, encourage grocery stores to locate in underserved communities, and that we're hopefully to get a little more money into. And then we want to increase the amount of funding for food banks. We've seen a lot of need for food across COVID and post-COVID, so we want to enhance that. And then for upstate folks, we really want to focus on our farms, dairy farming in particular. A lot of our dairy farmers have had a tough time and have very low margins, so we want to strengthen their dairy margin coverage program. We want to support our fruits and vegetables growers. We have hugely important specialty crops in New York State, so we want to increase funding for the specialty crop grant, block grant program. And one very, very challenging thing is a lot of our dairy farmers, unfortunately, have been succumbing to suicide over the last few years because mm-hmm. it's been so tough. So we want to have a hotline that's part of the National Hotline for Mental Health, that we have somebody on the line who actually understands farming. So we want to have a culturally and substantive competent person answering that phone when they call in. So we're hoping to just get a button. You know, they'll say, are you a veteran? Are you a college kid? Are you a farmer? So that it's specified, so our farmers know that there's someone who understands their challenges. And the last piece of the Farm Bill that I'm working hard on is rural development. One of the challenges we've had is helping to create jobs and access to capital in rural areas. So we have a rural partnership program that's modeled after a bill I wrote called the Rebuild Rural America Act that's going to give money grants to businesses, to job training, to any type of strategic plan for rural areas. We also want to provide more funding for rural hospitals and child care centers. And last, we want to help our towns that have PFAS poisoning be able to clean up their access to clean water. And that's a big issue for a number of our upstate counties, particularly Rensselaer County. So,
yeah. Were you happy to see the EPA set a new MCL level for PFAS chemicals recently?
Very grateful. I've been pushing that for a long time, at least the last 5 years, because we know it's a carcinogen. We know it kills you. And the fact that the EPA had not acted up until this point was very frustrating. So setting a standard is the first step to getting justice and getting remuneration for the families that are being poisoned because of the pollution in their water.
Let me go back to something you mentioned in the batch of Farm Bill issues. Are we not paying members of the armed services enough money to do that work if, you know, one in four is dealing with food insecurity?
No, we aren't paying them enough. And the truth is, when you serve in the military, there's pay bands that are national, international, really. And so you might be a junior enlisted making $35,000 a year or $40,000 a year. Well, if you live on Staten Island, I can promise you that's not going to be enough for you
right.
to pay for your housing, plus your food, plus your transportation, because New York City is really expensive. And, you know, it's just a different cost of living than if you're living in Albany versus Staten Island, or living in Oklahoma or Staten Island. So we really saw a lot of food insecurity for families that were living in high cost areas. And we need to do more by those families.
Let me ask you about the fentanyl bill you were promoting the other day, the Fend Off Fentanyl Bill, which was part of that supplemental defense package. What does it do?
So the most important thing it did is declare the international traffic in fentanyl as a national emergency. And by making that declaration, it surges resources and surges authorities for the administration to do much more. It will require the president to sanction transnational criminal organizations and drug cartels, key members that are engaging in this trafficking. It enables the president to use the proceeds of forfeited sanctioned property of fentanyl traffickers to further law enforcement efforts. It enhances the ability to enforce sanctions violations, making it much more likely that people who defy U.S. law will be caught and prosecuted. It requires a report to Congress about what the government's doing to take care of this. It allows Treasury to utilize special measures to combat fentanyl-related money laundering, and requires the Treasury Department to prioritize fentanyl-related suspicious transactions, which will allow us to go after more of these drug cartels and their financing.
I have just a couple of seconds left in today's segment, but I was wondering, what was your reaction to the judge's ruling throwing out the Equal Rights Amendment that was supposed to be on New York State's ballot this fall?
Well, I was very disappointed. This is about being able to access medical care, to have full equality for women, to make sure that we have access to reproductive freedom. And I think it was a technical problem. So I'm hopeful that on appeal that we will prevail. And I just hope that we can be heard on this argument because it was literally a technical issue that should not prohibit it from moving forward.
I'm just wondering, were you surprised that Bernie Sanders from next door Vermont decided to run for another term?
You know, I've found over the many years that when people devote their life to public service, they really love it and they really feel like they are called to it and can make a difference. So I'm not surprised that he's running for re-election. I'm sure he feels like he can continue to serve and be a voice for Vermonters and make a difference. So I'm not surprised.
So speaking of re-election campaigns, you have one. Since your last time being with us, we interviewed the Republican candidate in the race, a retired police officer named Mike Sapricone. I'm going to paraphrase him. He said, you're kind of part of the problem in Washington. So just wondering, you know, what would you say is your message to voters about why they should send you back for another 6 years?
Well, I would simply say that I have a very strong record of getting things done and that I reach across the aisle and work with Republicans to find the common sense, common ground to make laws that help people. Some examples of those laws that I've passed by working across the aisle and bringing people together are the 9/11 health bill. And we've done it over the last 15 years, three times to get the resources that our first responders and family members need. Similarly, we work to get all of our veterans who were exposed to toxic burn pits during the war on terror access to health care. That helped 3.5 million veterans. I've been working really hard on public safety. My bill to end gun trafficking, to make it a federal crime, passed last year, and we paired it with $1 billion for mental health violence disruption. That money has flowed into New York. They've gotten over $100 million of grant money for mental health issues, as well as we've arrested nationally, I think, 200 traffickers. We've confiscated over 2,000 weapons. That really helps our law enforcement keep our community safer. I've also done a lot of work for women in the military, men and women in the military, giving them benefits for accessible childcare, giving them safer and better housing, focused on sexual assault and sexual harassment, changing the legal system. And I've worked a lot to improve the workplace for workers. Two years ago, we were able to allow someone who's harassed or assaulted in the workplace to go to a court of law, not have to sign non-disclosure agreements, restoring their constitutional rights. We're going to try to do the same thing for age discrimination this year. I've been working with Lindsey Graham on that. So my argument to voters is that it's an honor to serve, it's a privilege to serve, and that I would want to continue to do this service because I know I can make a difference and that I've gotten good things done for our state.
Actually, I mentioned a retired police officer, so that gives me a segue to ask you about an idea you have to address a shortage of law enforcement officers in New York and elsewhere, and that's to offer them child care. How would a program like that work, and how would we pay for it?
So one of the challenges that a lot of our first responders have is a challenge that our military men and women have, and I worked on it in the military context before I started to work on it in the first responder context. They don't have regular hours. They sometimes have to be at work by 4 a.m. They sometimes work till 2 a.m. And a lot of families that serve as first responders are often married to other first responders. So it's a double whammy when they have young children. So this bill will authorize $24 million in funding for each of the next 5 years under the Child Care Development Grant Program. It allows HHS to provide grants of up to $3 million for opening child care centers that have flexible hours that can meet the needs of these group of workers that regular daycares, regular child care cannot meet their needs at all. And it's really restricting people from joining law enforcement and from staying in law enforcement. I met with a number of our law enforcement across the state, and they've said that for firefighters and for police officers and for EMTs, they're having a real tough time getting the number of people they need. They can't recruit and they can't retain. So we need public safety, and one way to help public safety is make it possible for more people to do these careers.
Let me jump overseas while we have you here. Obviously, Antony Blinken has been calling in recent days for a ceasefire in Gaza. So do you think President Biden's administration is doing enough to stop the carnage there? And how would you like to see things move forward?
So, you know, this is an issue that's tearing apart our state, tearing apart our country. People are very divided over what to do and how to do it. my perspective is this. Terrorism is devastating. And what happened on October 7th is something that we should never wish on our worst enemy. It was so heinous, so evil, so destabilizing for the region. And the goal of Hamas was to create a 100 years war. Hamas doesn't believe Israel has a right to exist. Hamas wants Israel destroyed and wants to kill all the Jews. That's part of their mission statement. And so this is a challenge because defeating a terrorist organization is nearly impossible. The United States tried very hard to defeat ISIS and Al-Qaeda after 9/11, and we degraded both, but we certainly didn't eliminate either one of them. It took us 20 years to degrade them. So what I think we should be doing specifically is working with our allies, working with Israel in how we can fight terrorism effectively and protect civilian life and help as many innocent people in Gaza as possible with humanitarian aid. It's complex and difficult to do, but we have to do everything we can to get a ceasefire and to get the hostages returned. The circumstances have to be right to make that happen. And Israel has made many offers about how to move to a ceasefire and to the return of all the hostages. Unfortunately, Hamas does not want that. They want a continuation of war and the destruction of Israel. So they've rejected a number of the deals that Israel has put forward, but I'm still hopeful. My hope for the region is that they can move towards a ceasefire and return of all hostages, and they can work on rebuilding a Palestinian state with the help of the Arab countries that want to align with Israel. It was part of the Abraham Accords over the last few years with the ambition to do this very work. And Saudi Arabia was about to join this coalition before October 7th. And I think the closeness of that deal, which would have been a regional alignment against Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis, and all Iranian proxies in Iran, an alignment of the United States, Israel, and a half dozen Arab countries, that's why October 7th happened, because something that Hamas did not want to happen. So we need to get back to that idea of a regional alliance in exchange for long-term commitments by these Arab countries to rebuild security in the region and rebuild a Palestinian state. And as Israel's ally, I hope we can work behind the scenes to create the circumstances under which that they can accept this vision. It was a vision that Israel shared before October 7th, so I'm hopeful we can get back to that vision.
What's your view of the campus protests that have really roiled things here stateside?
Well, you know, it's part of our tradition that young people, particularly college students, can protest, be heard on an issue, speak their mind to their administrations. And that's something that, you know, the United States has always encouraged. Unfortunately, what we've seen of late is that notion get distorted to a place where there's been enormous anti-Semitism rising and violence at some of these encampments. We've seen a destruction of property. We've seen the breaking of school rules. We've seen the breaking of laws. And a number of campuses had to act to preserve the safety and security of their students. A lot of students did not have a good experience over the last month. They couldn't go to class. They couldn't go to the libraries. They couldn't go and be with other students. And classes were moved online. Unfortunately, some schools have had to cancel their graduations. So I think, unfortunately, some of these protests have been so distorted and so metastasized into something that's destructive and has ruined the college experience for all the students. That's not what we mean when we talk about peaceful protest.
It's 6 months from the election. How confident are you in President Biden's reelection chances?
I'm very hopeful. One of the things that I believe voters will turn to when they start focusing on the election is not only President Biden's vision for the future, but how many down payments he's made on that vision. Addressing public safety up front by investing in mental health, investing in first responders, police force, and getting traffic guns off the streets. The amount of investment he's made in healthcare with getting prescription drug prices down for seniors, capping the insulin at $35 a month, capping the most used prescription drugs of seniors and having it cost less than $2,000 a year for seniors. I think what he's done to grow our economy is really, really inspiring. New York's going to see enormous investments. Gateway Tunnel, Second Avenue Subway, almost every area will have road bridges and sewers being invested in. Huge long-term projects of national significance for every major city in upstate New York. Projects that right wrongs of the past when we had highways go through communities, destroying them and cutting them off from downtowns or cutting them off from riverfronts. Those type of investments are generational, and I'm so excited about them. So, but it's going to take time. Those investments are going to take 10 years to spend the money to build the thing and do the thing that it's the money's for. But these are all down payments on his vision of a strong economy, of getting costs down for people, of fighting issues of public safety, dealing with the border, dealing with migration, dealing with laws that need to be changed. And I'm just optimistic that when people focus on the good things he's done to move us forward on all those issues and the things he wants to still do, that they will be supportive of him.
Okay, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.